definitely Old Testament. It's written by Isaiah, who lived through the exile and the fall of Israel. The people of God are coming back from Babylon. They're coming back to their promised land of milk and honey, back to Jerusalem. They've been dreaming of returning home. And when they get there, they find that it's in ruins. The temple has been destroyed. They think God has turned his back on them. They think it because they've been disobedient. But Isaiah's not despairing. He says there's still a chance for a new start. He says you have to call out to God. They know that it's their fault. They've accepted that they've done wrong. And they know that they've suffered because of that. They know that because they did wrong, they were sent away. They were sent to Babylon and they lived in exile for a long time. But Isaiah tells them that God's faithful. Despite the fact that their whole world has been turned upside down, they ask for his help. The first verse says, "Oh, that you would rend the heavens and come down, that the mountains would tremble before you." They're waiting for him to come and put things right. But they also accept that they know they need to change. They say to him, "We're the clay. You're the potter. We are all the work of your hands." I wonder what we do when our worlds are turned upside down, as they often are. Sometimes we try and use our own strength to sort things out for ourselves. And we struggle along, and we still can't work things out. What can we do about these things? What we can do is wait faithfully for the Lord to come and rebuild. Wait for him to speak into the chaos and make sense of it. We have to learn how to trust and to be patient. And like the Israelites, we can think back on what he's done for us before. The Israelites always went back to that time when they were in Egypt, when they knew that God rescued them and performed miracles to get them through the wilderness and into the promised land. We also can do the same thing. We can think back in our lives, and most of us have got a long way to think back by the looks of us. We can think, what has he done for us before? Where has he been? When I went through that problem, when I went through those troubles, what did he do for me then? And we'll know that he's always there with us. He's always there for us. We have to trust him to do the same again. Be patient and wait. It's not always easy, is it? In this sort of life that we lead now, everything is immediate. We can get things straight away. We don't want to wait. We don't want to get on with things. We want things to be sorted. But sometimes God tells us we have to wait. Sometimes there's a lesson to be learned before we can move on. God promises them later in chapter 65 that he will create new heaven and a new earth, and their sins will not be remembered. They won't be considered any longer. He's going to build a new Jerusalem, and he will delight in his people. The sound of weeping and crying will be heard no more. We're still waiting for that. We're still waiting for that, aren't we? When we get a new heaven and a new earth. And how does that fit in with our world at the moment? Our lives might be in chaos, our personal lives, but our world is certainly in chaos. And we're waiting. Verse 4 tells us that God acts on behalf of those who wait for him. But that waiting doesn't have to be passive. Those that do gladly right and follow the ways that God told them, that's what it says. A new start requires all of Israel to commit. Isaiah knows that God's committed to the people. But are the people committed to God? Are we committed to God? Are we ready to be moulded, to be the people that he wants us to be? We need to do it. Leaders need to do it. Everybody needs to do it. So, This reading from Mark is a bit scary, isn't it? The images that it describes, the sun is darkened, no light from the moon. Well, as it reflects the sun and the sun's dark, then that follows, doesn't it? We won't have any light from the moon. Stars falling from the sky, heavenly bodies shaken. But it's not just scary, it's kind of a bit reassuring as well. We like to know what's going on. Perhaps it's better to be in the know than to be an outsider. Jesus makes it clear that the only way that we can be inside is to trust in God. We must be who we are called to be, and that's the important thing. This is a call to us as individuals, and also to the church community. We have to keep doing God's work. In Paul's letter to the Thessalonians, in chapter 3, he told them to settle down and earn the bread they eat, tire of doing right. Now, he wrote this because some of them had decided that Jesus was definitely returning. They knew that the second coming was imminent. And so they sat down and they chatted together and they waited passively for this to happen. Needless to say, it didn't happen. And Paul said to them, that's not what God's asked you to do. He hasn't asked it of us either. We're not to sit and wait. We need to keep watching. We need to keep being alert. But while we're waiting for the owner of the house, Jesus, to come back, we have to keep this house in order. We're all each called to do something. There may be more than one thing we're called to do. God's house, his church, needs us to wait actively, not just sit around, not stagnating while we sit in our comfort zones. We have a commission, and that commission is to go and make disciples of all people. So personally, we need to keep ourselves in order, living the way that Jesus told us. And as a church community, we need to be reaching out in whatever ways we can, using the spiritual gifts that he gives us. And what are we using them for? We're using them to increase his kingdom here on earth. The Advent themes of watching and waiting are not passive activities, but ones that require us to have an active engagement with the world as we look for signs of God's hope, his grace, and certainly in this time of conflict and uncertainty, we need to look carefully. We're called to trust in his divine plan. Sometimes it's difficult to see where God is in some of the things that are going on in the world today. But we have to trust. We have to trust. And we have to get on with the business of living faithfully, being who we're meant to be, doing what we're meant to do, what he means us to do. We're going to listen now to a monologue from an army major.
I'm a military man, an army major. I like to have things in good order. I went to church today, but I couldn't sleep tonight with an untidy, disruptive thought going through my head. I got up and made some tea. I tried to finish the crossword, but I couldn't shake off this nagging feeling. It started by thinking of D-Day. In 1944, a lot of people were expecting something. The Germans were expecting an invasion in the West. They didn't know where. They had thousands of miles of coastline to protect. They didn't know when. But one thing they knew for sure, it would come. The Allies in Britain put up an elaborate deception. Double agents, double dummy preparations and radio traffic led Germany to believe it would come near Calais, or even in Norway. The Germans poured millions of tons of concrete into the Atlantic Wall, a network of fortifications, mines, obstacles and guns. General Rommel believed the only hope of fighting the invasion was to stop the Allies on the beaches. A French resistance was also waiting, longing for an end to the dark oppression of their country. They hung onto their radios, waiting for the prearranged code words from the BBC. These would indicate an invasion was imminent, galvanise them into disruptive action. So there was a lot of expectation, but no one knew where and when it would come, until early morning on June the 6th. A German soldier on the Normandy beach peered through the mist and saw a normally clear sea, completely filled with boats of every description. Then he knew when and where the invasion would come. But there was still feverish speculation and uncertainty in the German command. Is this the expected invasion? Or is it a feint? Will the real attack come by Calais? As I thought about it, I realised with a shock that the coming of Jesus was like D-Day. The invasion of the Messiah was long expected, earnestly hoped for. It was not a question of if, but when he would come. Then something happens that comes as a complete surprise. John the Baptist appears, like those warnings to the resistance and boats in the channel. He sets off a fever of speculation. The authorities dispatch investigators. No, he says, he is not the Messiah, but he is preparing the way for the Messiah. And then the invasion happens, and light enters the dark world like hope flowing through France. The nagging thought was this. One day the process will be repeated. Jesus will come again. It's not a question of if, but when. But I ask myself, as a military man, am I expecting it as much as the Germans expected D-Day? Am I preparing for it as thoroughly as they did? Am I ready for the light? I turn these troublesome thoughts over in the hour before dawn.
Thank you. So Jesus' second coming, like D-Day. We know it's going to happen. We don't know where, we don't know when, but we do need to prepare and we do need to be ready. What I'd like you to do now is to just look around this worship space, look around this church. What can you see inside the building? You can't see much out unless you're facing the way I am, because I can certainly see out through the back doors. But have a look around and see what you can see. Now I ask you to close your eyes. What can you hear? You might be able to hear things outside. You might be able to hear things inside. Now think about what you've seen and what you've heard. And I would like you just silently to thank God for the things that you've seen in this church, for the people that you've seen in this church, and the things that you've heard. One thing that I know I'd like to thank you for is the heating, because I can hear that, and it's lovely and warm in here today. So as we thank God for the things that we've seen and heard in this place, in this worship place, let's think about which of those things need looking after until the Son of Man comes. Which of these things do we need to look after until the Son of Man comes? Let's silently ask God to help us, the people in his church, to stay alert in looking after those things. And still with your eyes closed, I'd like you to become aware of your own body. Does it feel fidgety? Or does it feel relaxed? Are you comfortable? Or are you not comfortable? Are you breathing fast? Are you breathing slowly? Do you feel warm? Do you feel cold? And now I'd like you to think about all the places that your body is going to go during the coming week. And as you think of each place that your body is going to go, ask God that He'll make His presence felt with you. Ask God to show you with His eyes all the jobs that He has for you to do in His world. Ask Him for His strength to help you do those jobs, and for His Spirit to prompt you. So let's open our eyes now and let's think about those values that we need to live. I was doing an assembly at one of the schools in Stansted Abbots this week, and we were talking about St Andrew because it was St Andrew's Day, and we talked about the message that Jesus said, "I will make you fishers of men." And I said to them, "What do you need to be like to become fishers of men, to attract those fish into your net, to attract people to you?" And they came up with such lovely values. They said they needed to be compassionate, a word that they know well because it's one of their Christian values that they focus on. Every half term they have a new value that they focus on. They needed to be honest, they needed to be trustworthy, they needed to be generous with their time. They needed to be ready to listen to other people, to be helpful, to be kind and caring. So all those values that those children came up with, we too need to think about that, because that way we're going to be ready and waiting and watchful and alert for Jesus to come, and we will be keeping His house in order. So in the reading, the man who went away is obviously Jesus, the Son of Man. But if that's the case, then I think to myself, what's the house that He's left? Where is that house that He's left? Where do you think that house is that He's left? Could be this church. This is God's house, isn't it? Our bodies, God's temple. So our own bodies, we need to keep them right for Him. The whole world is His house. Because we say that the church isn't just a building. We're the church. We go out into the world. So lots of different areas for us to focus on when we're being alert, watchful and awake. You know what? Recently, I'm sorry to say, and here I am confessing my sins, but I was caught speeding. I was very cross that I was caught speeding because I was coming back from Cornwall and the whole journey took me 15 hours. I could not imagine where I was speeding. But it was actually on the junction between the M5 and the M4 where there was a temporary speed limit, which I didn't notice. But instead of having my driving licence with points on and having to pay a fine, they sent me on a course which was online, and the course was to help me become more watchful and alert to driving hazards. So I would understand why it was important I didn't speed. And it was a very useful course. I still did have to pay to go on the course, and it cost me as much as the fine would have done. But I didn't have to have points on my license. So for me, that was a warning. Be alert. Be watchful. Understand where hazards might be. And that's what we have to do in our lives, isn't it? That is what we need to do in our lives. Look after his house until the Son of Man comes home. And I found this prayer, and I thought I would finish by this prayer, which is by Mother Teresa. I used to pray that God would feed the hungry, or do this or that. But now I pray he will guide me to do whatever I'm supposed to do what I can do. I used to pray for answers, but now I'm praying for strength. I used to believe that prayer changes things, but now I know that prayer changes us, and we change things. Amen.